That old FDR line, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
And giant spiders.
And giant spiders.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
Welcome back, boys. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Also had an idea for a fun segment. We can do more of this later on down the line, but like, there are so many Grongi. We discussed last week as well that there are Grongi that are killed off screen that we never get to see. And you and I don't have a list of those. But Jetty does.
Yes.
So I had an idea for a bit called Will It Grong? kind of like Will It Blend, but like come up with an animal and maybe just a special power that relates to that animal. The example I threw out was a kangaroo. You know, and like, so you've got the kangaroo Grongi, and then they've got like the human affectation would be like a fanny pack. But then like the Grongi adaptation is within the pouch. There's another smaller Grongi that just like hops out, stabs somebody and hops back in. I thought that'd be spectacular. And like at the end of the bit, after I've gone through my design, Jetty will inform us whether or not that animal has already been claimed by a Grongi that we either have not seen yet or don't get to see at all. So Jetty, is there a kangaroo Grongi?
Zugalgada.
He's even got the fucking name. Damn it.
So fine. That was an off-screened one, right?
Yeah, Zugalgada over there.
I'm all now right. Imagining a kangaroo with the Wonder Woman tiara.
With Ancient Lamentations theme in the background. So apparently I'm going to have to get much more creative than kangaroo going forward, but we'll see about it.
I'm looking forward to what you come up with for the next episode.
Hell yes. And if you want to get in on this too, like Jetty's got his Monster Mash, we got to have something.
Fair. I have an idea for a segment eventually, but it requires us getting to the right season.
Bet.
Because I have a fixation with belt announcements, and we haven't quite gotten to where they're doing that yet.
Valid. So what episodes are we watching this week?
So this week we are going to be watching episodes 23 and 24, which are Uneasiness and Strengthening.
Uneasiness and Strengthening. Jared, any speculations for what we'll see?
So, I mean, uneasiness could be really anything, you know, based off what we know is coming. Either this is Garima Ba's episode, and as the leader of the Meh, she would be probably the strongest one, and that could lead to some easiness, or it could be the first time Godai fights a Go. And that strengthening would seem to imply an upgrade, although this feels too early to get to. Certainly not the ultimate form. What was it? Amazing? The upgraded form of Mighty Kuga? I've watched a bunch of compilations of form videos, and I know there is an upgraded form between baseline Mighty Kuga and ultimate form, but this feels too early in the season for that.
Yeah, see, I'm still in the dark about, like, a lot of the forms and how those things play out, but, you know, I do have some spoilers on what, you know, one of the endgame forms for the series will look like. Just because I saw it as an action figure in Japan, unfortunately. Spoiled it for myself.
It's literally the halfway point.
That's valid.
No,
there are only
not.
Three more discs.
I guess at the end of this second episode, we'll be halfway through.
See, uneasiness and strengthening for me, I think Ichijo is going to get uncomfortable with how interested in Godai Tsubaki is. And so is going to start going to the gym and working out so he can actually compete with Mr. Goldchain.
Do you think Godai would... I mean, their love is so pure, no matter what Ichijo does, he's going to follow. But do you think Godai is going to be into that or just be like, hey, babe, no, you don't have to do that. Please don't get buff. I think, like you the way you are.
I think Godai is a puppy dog, so he'll just be excited for Ichijo, whatever he's doing, and happy to participate in any way he can.
Fair.
There's no malice or jealousy in that man. It's just good vibes only.
Well, if that's what happens, I tell you what. I'll buy you lunch.
Nom noms. All right, I'm going to go very, very loose with my interpretation of events this episode. I'm going to warn you right now.
We have producer Jed as the third party.
As the referee.
Father trader.
It's the weather. See, I get salad bar or not. Well, shall we get into it, boys?
I think we shall.
Hell yeah.
Episodes 23 and 24 were written by Inoue Oshiki and directed by Naga Ishitaka. They aired July 9th and 16th, 2000. A Jump to the Sky turns to a writer review.
This is an exciting episode.
Oh, yeah. We are off to the races immediately.
All right, shall we get into it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go.
All right, so we start at Jonin University. Sakurako is at her computer, as she is oft to do. The decorations on top of the computer have changed again. It's now a little bunny.
Yeah, it's a little bunny. It's cute.
And as she's looking over something, her eyes start to get wide. Jean, who's just sort of standing there in the room, notices this and tries to talk to her, but she doesn't acknowledge his existence.
Same thing happens to me when I discover Pornhub for the first time.
We go to the opening credits.
We leave this conversation heading towards the opening credits.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cut back to Polpol. Pops is cooking something.
Mm-hmm.
Nana walks in. He asks if she's okay. She apologizes for missing so much work.
Was she actually employed there? Did we establish that?
I guess so.
I thought she was just like hanging out and helping because she liked Godai. I didn't think she was actually properly... The employment status of people with Polpol is constantly in flux.
I think that Pops just assumes that Yusuke, Minori, and Nana are all on the payroll.
Yeah, if somebody's in Polpol long enough, Pops just asks them to do things, and the assumption just sticks in his head from there.
Yes, it is the, if you stay here, you work here.
Yeah, he's convinced Ichijo's been out on delivery for like the last 6 months.
Yeah, I believe that. Pops is a very sweet moment of being like, well, are you sure you're okay? Remember, as we found out in the last week's episodes, Nana's drama teacher was killed by Galma Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And she says so. Pops makes a pun. She gets mad.
It's only cute when Godai does it.
She asks where Godai is, and Pops is like, oh, he's somewhere. He's just not that into you. He makes another joke. We cut back to Jonin.
Mm-hmm.
Godai came in through the door.
Yeah, it's because Sakuraku wasn't there.
Yeah.
He only does that for her.
And that's what we find out, because he's greeted by Jean, who, greets him in English.
It's like, I'm telling you, I think Jean's role in this series is fading, and he's becoming more of an NPC and background just ornament with every episode.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Soon he'll be just speaking French, and nobody will be able to participate with him.
You know what? That actually sounds right.
Mm-hmm. Just rocking back and forth in the corner, eating his pickled plums.
I wonder what the French for weebles wobble, but they don't fall down is.
I don't know, but it's offensive.
I'm sure I can look it up. So Godai asks where Sakurako is. Jean says that, you know, she went out. He thinks she might have found something. And Godai's like, oh, is it about the tingles? And Jean, clearly having not been given this information, is your tingles.
What the fuck?
Phrasing? Are we doing phrasing?
And Godai's like, yeah, my tingles. I asked her to look into it. And Jean's like, nope, I don't think so.
Please. Surely there's a better person than Sakurako to look into your tingles, sir.
This does bring up the question. Does Jean know that Godai is Kuga?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's why it feels like he's being left behind in the series, is because I think he's one of the few recurring characters who's still completely out of the loop.
Because, like, he knows about the Goram. He knows about the translation. He's been there. He's seen this stuff. I don't know for certain that he's seen Godai transform.
And to my memory, it's never been directly discussed in front of him. So I think he might just still be in the dark on all this.
Oh, man, that means everyone else assumes that he's in the loop and thus feels no need to inform him?
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, and that's why he feels more and more like an NPC, but he's not genre aware. He's not genre aware. Groan louder. It sustains me.
Also, if you do, maybe the audio will pick it up.
Bombastic side-eye.
Oh, we haven't had this
criminal
in a while.
Offensive side-eye.
I made it 3 episodes.
At least.
New record.
But speaking of Sakurako, we get a quick shot of her just walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think something would happen here, but it doesn't. She's just walking.
Yep.
We then cut to the Joint Task Force, and they are having a full meeting about... They jumped to ULF...
35.
They indicate that more have happened since the death of Galma Ray.
These meetings are a good way to discuss these time skips. I just honestly wish we still just got these different Grungy. Like, I get that we want to move along, but, like, damn, show us the cool stuff.
Yeah. So the meeting goes on, and they're discussing ways that they can up the police presence to try and instill confidence in the people, because, man, this incident's going on a lot longer than we thought it would. They do mention that, you know, it seems to be, you know, at least contained between Nagano and Tokyo, but it is concerning that 03 keeps going back and forth. And, you know, speaking of that, we cut to Nagano, and Father Jose is chanting at the mud. He has what looks kind of like a soul cage. If any of you are 40K fans and know the Jukari, the Dark Eldar, it looks like one of their things.
That's so specific, but so accurate.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah. So he does the world's worst worm grunting.
And a stone comes out of the ground, and he says he's been blessed. And we get a close-up on the stone, and stuck in it is something that looks awfully similar to one of those leaf things.
Oh, metal leaves, yeah.
That in last week, Zaijo Rei had just finished polishing. These, I guess, are important, and at some point we'll find out what they are, but it's going to remain a mystery for now.
It's for his Etsy shop, Jared. He makes costume jewelry.
We cut back to Bunkyo Ward. Godai has just tried calling Sakurako on a payphone, doesn't get an answer, when he gets a call from Ichijo over the bike. And Ichijo's like, hey, can you meet me at the park with the fountains? Yeah.
You mean Fountain Park?
Yes, but we don't know that that's what he means this time. We cut to the hospital, and Tsubaki is pouring tea. And we see that Sakurako's there, and Tsubaki seems to think that, oh, she's here to see him.
Mm-hmm.
She is, but she's here to see him because of Godai.
Lame.
And there's more discussion about these tingles that Godai has been feeling lately.
Tsubaki does seem pretty interested in Godai's tingles.
Yes.
This is definitely fruity.
Yeah.
Like 85%. It's as fruity as Jean's diet.
Tsubaki tries to put some moves on, commenting on how they take their tea. And Sakurako shuts it down very quickly. I mean, like, it's not that kind of call, buddy.
He only has game when he isn't trying.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, he also can't get, like, he's got to keep up the persona. Like, he can't off her. She's too close to another character. Like, this rule one of being, like, a medical serial killer is you don't shit where you eat, man.
I'm so tired.
Fall in love with less murdery characters. There was no reason for that much water to be in an autopsy lab.
Look, man, we're just, you know, giving back what Tsubaki's giving to us.
Yeah, and we have listener feedback that confirms that was a weird fucking moment.
Thank you to special guest host Stefan for pointing us to that article that called out how weird that was.
Yeah, apparently he Googled, like, why would there be water on the floor of an autopsy room? And the literal first result was discussing this episode of Kuga. Like, there's no fucking reason for this. This was weird. This should not happen.
So the gist of it boils down to Tsubaki thinks he might know why these tingles are happening for Godai, but he's waiting for the results of the most recent test he's run to confirm it. What test was this? Who knows? We didn't see it.
So this is love. Do-do-do-do.
Sakurako thanks him for his time, apologizes for bothering him, and leaves. And Tsubaki's like, you didn't even drink the tea I made you.
I poisoned it myself.
Care for a cup of poise? I mean tea?
Regular tea with no extra additives.
Here's some powdered strychnine. I mean sugar. Your head shaking and eye rolling just encourages us. We follow Sakurako. And
much like Tsubaki.
And she's going up to a train station. And as she's there, there's someone who's passing out lighters to people. This seems like a small, insignificant detail, but the show made a point to show it.
Mm-hmm. And Chekhov's incendiary.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of Chekhovs this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't help but feel that the lighter is going to be important somehow. And the train pulls in. We get a good panning shot of, like, the other people who are there besides her. They all get on the train. And we get another person getting on the train. Well, I guess person's not the right word. Because Megari Maba gets on the train. We get some fascinating close-ups on her fingernails.
Mm-hmm. And her just being rude as shit on a train.
Yeah. She also seems to have some sort of, I guess, incense burner fixed to her, because it is smoking slightly. But yeah, she just walks through the train, not saying excuse me, causes one person to drop their purse to the ground.
Yeah, just squares her shoulders and bulldozes her way through.
And, you know, as is right and proper, she's getting glares and stuff from the other passengers. We're like, what? No, this isn't how you behave on a train.
Listen, if Kuga can't defeat the Grongi, social condemnation will.
She is shamed into changing her ways.
Guys, I can't do this anymore. I just feel like such a dick all the time.
So from there, we cut to Fountain Park. This is where we learn that it's called Fountain Park and not just the park with the fountain. Of course it's the park with the fountain. It's Fountain Park.
Yeah, there were quite a few fountain in that park.
They were very nice looking. I would enjoy going there.
Prominent, yeah.
And Godai and Ichijo are discussing, again, this has gone on a lot longer than any of them expected.
Yeah, and they discuss the kill counts up to 1,389.
Yes.
This rounds out to 39.5 per Grongi.
So some of our boys have done very well, because we know that there are quite a few on our roster that haven't gotten to 35.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that means there are some Grongi, especially some off-screen ones, that have done a ton of killing. Which we don't condone.
No.
Ever.
Not at all.
Not on this podcast. But, yeah, 1,400 people are dead.
Yeah. Confined mainly to Tokyo.
Yep.
The fact that people are still able to go about their day-to-day lives shows the incredible resiliency of the human spirit.
Yeah. I'm still working my 9-to-5. 30 people fell out of the sky yesterday outside my restaurant, but, you know, cup noodle's not going to sell itself.
Sakuraku calls Ichijo, just says she wants to meet up with him. We then cut to, maybe it's an underpass, it's unclear where we are, but Labaruba Day is there, and so's someone else.
Mm-hmm.
This is La Doldogu, played by Basara Tenmei. His name is a corruption of the English condor.
Conjure?
Condor.
Condor? Oh, so him bird.
Well, that would make sense since Gu is flying.
Yeah, he's got all them scarves and shit.
Also interesting, because he's a law.
Mm-hmm.
Up until this point, Baruba Day is the only law we've seen.
Yeah, we're at new tiers of enemy. Very interesting design on that character, for sure, like with the whole scarves blocking half the face. You know, it's a staple trope in Japanese movies and series is the character that has half their face covered and kind of muffles their speaking the whole time. Like, you got, you know, Mr. Aizawa for a long time in My Hero. You've got that one dude in the great coat in Helsing. It's a thing.
He doesn't say anything in this scene. He's just sort of standing there holding the abacus.
Yeah.
And Baruba Day tells Garima that she is the only meh left. So all of the others at this point are dead.
Yep.
Megari Maba is portrayed by Kiro Mio, Iojima Mio at the time. Garima is derived from Kamakiri, meaning praying mantis.
Yeah, and that makes sense with the big old scythe.
Yeah. It's very reminiscent. Also, her nail polish, the green streaks look like mantis claws.
Yeah, lots of sharp edges, lots of, you know, straight designs.
And as she's saying this, James Dean, ba-da-ba, shows up. Still got the scarf, the jacket, he's flipping the coin. And he makes a reference that something is about to start and that only the Go are allowed to participate in it. I didn't catch the name of it, but it looked like a variation of Grigel, which, you know, is the game. So, semifinals?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I would think.
We're now onto the big boy leagues.
It is later referred to as the semifinals.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that makes sense.
And so we find out Garima's requirements for the game. 16 hours, was it 172?
Didn't catch the kill count.
288.
288? And her plan is to walk slowly and let people pass her?
So she says that she's going to do it the way a Go would. And Bada's like, well, if that's what you're going to do, best of luck. Galma Ray also said something about trying to do things the way a Go
right,
would.
Which seemed to involve putting limitations on her own abilities. Like, he was announcing to a witness where his next kill would take place after everyone. She's got the thing where she, well, we'll get to it in a second, but she has her own particular affectation.
Yes. And from there, we cut to the Institute of Police Science, and we get two of the researchers, just random ones, discussing that, according to this new report that's come out, ULF-4 has been given special designation as a police, was it accomplice?
The corroborator.
Corroborator, that was the term. And that he is to be assisted in any way possible. And they're like, oh, we should talk to Yanakita about this, and also probably that Godai fellow.
We should let him know about this ULF-4 character.
At the hospital, Godai is talking with Tsubaki about the tingles, and basically the entire scene boils down to a joke right at the end. And that joke is Tsubaki going, oh, I know why these tingles have started for you. It's because I shocked you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he did the defibrillator. The funny thing is I think he might actually be telling the truth there, even if he doesn't realize it. We cut to the Chu Ward, and Garima is slowly walking down some stairs, while in front of her, a couple is walking towards her. And this isn't just any couple. We saw them at the train station. Mm-hmm. They got on the same subway train as her. And as they walk past each other, she's also, by the way, just holding that sickle.
Yeah, she's walking straight towards this couple with a fuck-ass big scythe.
It is larger than she is.
Yep. It's nerf or nothing, baby.
They pay no attention.
You know what? This continues our proud Kuga tradition back to episode one of people walking towards their own demise with no attempt at self-preservation.
Yeah, yep. We do have a well-worn tradition in this show of people doing nothing to prevent their own deaths.
Well, this lady with the large scythe wants to kill us. It would be rude for me to prevent that, so I guess I'll just go on in there.
So right as they cross paths, Garima briefly transforms into her full monster form, transforms back, continues walking, and says, don't look back.
So, of course, like chuckleheads, they go, huh, and both look back, and
their heads fall off.
Yep.
Obviously, they don't show it, although they do, for the one guy, kind of show that his head and neck are moving independent of his shoulders.
Okay, that was a good use of our primitive CGI, because all they did is for a brief second show a line on his face and like move them in slightly different directions before they cut away to blood.
And then they show a necklace falling to the ground with blood. It's a very effective shot.
It is. See, like, you know, this was an era of what we would all these days consider very primitive CGI, but that was a great way to incorporate it in a passing shot that added and didn't seem campy, you know?
Because it's just a very brief use. The scene cuts away immediately, just long enough for you to register that it has happened, but not to be critical of it.
I'm sure if we went back and like actually freeze-framed on that one last panel before it cut away, it would look atrocious. But with the rapidity of it, it was spectacular.
Oh, yeah. So good. And Garima flips two of the charms on the bracelet.
Ding dong.
Tsubaki calls Ichijo, and they have a discussion like Tsubaki's had with everyone in this episode about these tingles in Godai. And Tsubaki's like, I think these are coming at a good time, because from what we have been autopsying, the Gorongi are getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
This could be Godai getting stronger as well. We'll see what happens. After this phone call, Ichijo gets another, and it is Sakurai saying that a new ULF has been noticed, that it's B 6?
Yeah, B6
is B6 is now ULF 36.
And is just walking around in broad-ass daylight with a huge sword.
We cut to Godai driving around. He gets the call from Ichijo saying, 36 has been found. Godai says, where do I need to go? Mm-hmm. And to illustrate this point, we then cut to an escalator.
You need to go to this escalator.
Not and looking at it, we see a dapper old man who, again, we saw at the train station going up.
The incense marker. They're scent marked. She marked a bunch of people on the train and is now hunting them down by smell. Which means Sakurako is on the kill list. If I'm right, I mean, that means she's on the kill list. Because it was sitting like we kept highlighting that incense burner. And then these are the people from the train that she's now gone out and found. Ooh. That's cool.
So
If I'm right.
It seems like you're... Because at the very least, whether it's people she's marked or not, these are all people who are on the same train as her.
Mm-hmm.
But Grandpa comes up the escalator. She goes down the other escalator right as they meet. Flash. Shing. She gets to the bottom, says, don't look back.
And of course, bad at following directions, looks back.
Grandpa's no more. Mm. We get a police announcement saying where the ULF is, you know, warning the public to stay away. And we see some more bodies laying on the ground, one of them being the sun hat of a little girl that we saw at the train station.
Who I insist was a criminal in her own right, just because they don't want to process the killing of a small human.
Yeah, this is a show for 12-year-olds.
Like I said, tax evasion. Prove to me that little girl ever paid taxes.
I mean, she's a child, so obviously she did not.
Being too young is a form of evasion.
I don't like the world where that is a truism. Kurima's moving some more charms on her bracelet. She clearly has a very high kill count at this point. And we see Doldo again there, just sort of standing by a pillar. And there's another Gurongi.
This is Goburo Gu. We'll cover him when his time comes.
Ominous.
He's wearing, like, a purple leather jacket and has very small, very dark sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly a look.
Yeah.
And he just comments that, oh, Garima's pretty impressive. And that's it for those two. Also, Doldo talks. His voice is much deeper than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. I like it. I like this character.
There's not really anything else to it. Just, I had to comment the voice does not match the frame.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to the fight.
Oh, yeah. And Godai shows up. And Garima's like, who are you? And he transforms. She's like, ah, Kuga. Yes.
Oh, yes. Hindsight, showing one of them his human form? Probably not a smart move.
He's shown a few of them his human form.
Doesn't mean it was a smart move then either.
No, we do have the benefit of they tend to end up dying.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, really cool fight scene. Yeah, very dynamic.
Great. We get some awesome practical shots, practical effects showing Garima cutting through things. The first one is just a traffic sign.
Yeah.
But later on, we're going to get
Stone pillar
part of the bike.
Yeah.
Yeah, she cuts part of the exhaust.
Very, very well done practical effects, for sure.
And
last thing we get before we head out is back at Jonin University.
Nope. I want to talk a bit more about the fight, because Kuga shifts to Titan form.
Oh, yes. I almost
and
forgot.
And he breaks her blade in half.
Yeah, how did I forget? That's like the most condescending thing I can think of. Shift into a form you can't hurt me in, break your toy, and then turn half of your toy into my toy.
He picks her sickle blade up, turns it into his sword. And then we cut to Jonin, and Sakurako is still staring, eyes somehow growing even wider at what she is reading.
She discovered the tag section on Pornhub.
End of episode. I want to see this.
Yeah, no, I'm honestly ready to just rock and roll with the next one.
Oh, man. This was so good.
Hell yeah. We're definitely escalating back into some of the cooler fight scenes.
let's just go ahead and get into it. Episode starts in the Minato Ward. We see a slight recap of the end of the fight from last episode. We get the scene of the muffler of the Tri-Chaser getting cut. They grapple some. Electricity starts sparking across the sword.
Yep, Godai experiences some erectile dysfunction with his weapon.
This actually causes some hesitation on his part. He's like, what's going on? The Goram shows up.
Thank God.
And I just want to bring this up, because the last time the Goram talked, the subtitle specifically said that it was in Gorongi. This time it says that it was in Linto.
Yep, so we have a multilingual semi-sentient bike beetle thing.
Yes.
Okay.
We get the credits. We cut back, still in the same fight. The Goram splits, attaches itself to the bike, so we get the Trigoram.
Hell yeah. So if your sword's not working, just go ahead and run your enemy over with your vehicle.
Yeah, he goes to do the...
He goes to ram her.
Is it Goram Break? Was that the name of the attack?
I'm just going to call it Go.
I know it's a Rider ram. Break is the genre of attack.
Try Go Ram Attack.
Okay.
Try to go and ram on the attack.
He does the Trigoram attack. We see that the front pincers, I almost want to call them tusks, but it's a beetle, so they're not tusks. catch fire. Just plow right into Garima Ba. She gets knocked back, stands up. The Kuga symbol is across her body, and she shakes it off.
Yeah, she just kind of like squares her shoulders, flexes, and the symbol fades. We're going to have to hit this one with a much larger vehicle.
Yeah, because remember, this took out Eugene Krabs and the truck.
God damn it, Eugene. Which now makes me want to, if this series has an English dub, I want Clancy Brown to do the Hermit Krabs voice. It will not match the character, but it'll make me personally happy.
I guess the Goram's power is sort of a one and done when it comes to the Trigoram attack, because it... crumbles again.
See, I think his shit's still just on the fritz. And we may see that that's the case. Like, it's a one-time use sort of dealio, but, like, it felt like to me, like, it wasn't able to hold it together any better than he was, based on, like, the weirdness going on with his powers.
Both times he's used the attack, it fell apart.
So, yeah, seems like a one and done.
Well, fine.
Ichijo shows up. Goda's like, hey, I hit her with the bike. And it didn't stop her. I should talk to Saratari about this. And Ichijo's like, I kind of already spoke with her. Goda's like, you did? It's like, yeah, we need to talk some more. And Goda's like, okay, well, I'm just kind of going to go off on my own. Is that okay?
So, yeah, no, that annoyed. I thought it was hilarious because they've got to get the parts of that bike back to the laboratory somehow, but Godai doesn't offer to, like, help load them in the trunk or anything. You know, Ichijo shows up with his car, and he's like, oh, great, you're here. I'm gonna go. So we can assume that in the next scene when Ichijo has Sugita out there, he just called him to have somebody else to help load the rocks into the back of the trunk.
That would be twice this episode that someone is just left a mess for someone else to clean up.
It's becoming a trope.
We cut to Jōden University. Sakurako is looking at the same text from last episode, and I didn't bring up what the text translated as last episode. Let's go over it this time. It says, when the holy spring dries up, the warrior will descend like a thunderclap, and the sun will be swallowed by darkness.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Certainly. We then cut back to Minato, probably. Ichijo is picking
the same
up.
Area. Yeah.
And Sugita is now there. He's talking to Ichijo. He's like, hey, so this is different. Because normally when a Gorongi attacks, everyone in the area dies. This one's leaving witnesses. This is going to start the B plot of them doing good, actual police
legitimate
work.
Legitimate police work, yeah.
While they're discussing, Tsubaki calls. And the call boils down to, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I don't think these victims knew they were dead till after they were.
Which, how do you know? How do you explain your science, you master autopsy man?
All his explanation is that the cut was made with incredible finesse.
It is funny, you know, and we're doing the best we can with the technology we have, but like, it is kind of funny to me that these weapons they're using look a little like the Nerf swords you could buy at like a Target or a Walmart. Like, they're an inch thick at least, look to be foam, and like
cutting on the atomic level.
Yeah to the point where people don't know they're dead until they turn around. Like, it's a little bit comical, but I appreciate it. It's been done well every time.
It just clicked. Headcanon, because the show clearly didn't tell us, goes through the brainstem, but again at like the molecular level. It's not until turning the head when the neurons finally detach.
Dead. You gotta go for that fourth lumbar down, Jared. Sweet spot.
Headcanon.
Is your headcanon now detached from your regular cannon? Yeah. Yep. I got you, boo.
We cut back to Jonan.
We panic back to Jonan.
We get, so far, the most blatant product placement the show has given us.
Mm-hmm. Only one scene, too. We get the full square on of the Casio brand radio right before Jean brings in his McDonald's.
No, that's already there. Saratari got it. And it's laid out, the bag is positioned just so that it is full on to the audience. The burger is still in its wrapping. We even get Godai saying out loud, "Oh, it tastes good even cold."
Look at camera, TM, wink.
That probably covered the budget for this episode, at least.
That paid for the GoRam.
Maybe that's how they were able to afford Janoga clone.
Yeah. Guys, we need to sell more products. We need more clones.
But while they're having this blatant product placement, Godai's like, "Hey, have you found anything?" And Saratari scowls, and he's like, "Come on, tell me." She scowls even harder. He's like, "We're friends. You can trust me. Come on. It's me, Godai. I'm literally incapable of changing personalities."
It's me, Godai. Everyone's friend. Oh, God, he does have big Krillin energy.
So she brings him over, shows him this prophecy, and Godai looks at it, reads it, and goes, "Well, the electricity's coming out of me right now, so this has got to be talking about someone else."
Yeah, this is some bullshit. It's me, Godai. Everything's fine.
"Well, he's stoop, he is very cute. That's why we named him Himbo."
Yep.
He will never change, and I am so happy for that.
"I'm a good boy."
Yeah. The best.
My favorite part of this scene, though, is that he does his routine like, "Everything's fine. I've got this." Thumbs up, full smiles. She doesn't seem particularly reassured, and he doesn't seem to know what to do with that. So he's like, "So I'm gonna go.
You hang out. I'll talk to you later.
I no longer have the resources to deal with whatever it is you're feeling right now. So I'm gonna peace."
We cut to the task force in the conference room, and there's a whole bunch of evidence laid out across the conference tables in bags. And Ichijo's kind of going through it, and he picks up one, and he walks over, and hey, it's one of those lighters that Saratari got. And there's a whole pile of them sitting there that he adds this one to.
Huh, weird. Probably unrelated.
Sugita comes in, and Ichijo's like, "Hey, so of the 41 victims, 16 of them had this lighter on them. We should check out that drugstore." This is good police work.
It's incredible what this team can accomplish when they're not handing out state's evidence to the first homeless man that walks in the building.
We get what I guess has become now our obligatory episode 2 scene of the Gorongi nursing an injury.
Yep.
Garima is holding her stomach, and it's Doldo who shows up first.
"You okay, buddy? You doing all right?"
Only not.
Yeah, not at all.
Just the typical, "You're running out of time. You've still got a lot to do." He even says, "Are you going to give up? Or are you going to endure as a Go does?" Which, okay, there's an implication there. Baruba Day, of course, shows up, she joins in the teasing because the law group just does not care about anyone.
Nope.
I want to know where they rank in this. I'm guessing just below Lord Raiden since they're the judges.
Yeah, I'm calling them lieutenants. I think we might get one more tier before we get to our boss. Us just both side-eyeing Jetty, trying to pick up any hints from his behavior. Nothing. He's giving me nothing.
Spoilers.
And Garima stands up, squares her shoulders, and just says, shut up and watch me.
Which I love that that's all they have to do to recover from injuries is like, you're gonna keep sucking, buddy? You know, a go would really get, okay, fine, I'm up.
All of the Garungi, all it takes to stand back up is to get negged enough.
I mean, same, really. Shut up, Jetty, you don't know.
I said nothing. Only thought it.
We cut back to Jonin University, and Jean is walking in. Sakuraka's like, hey, I'm about to leave. I need to go check out some stuff. I made a big mess doing the research. She says that she'll clean it up, but the implication there is, can you do it for me?
Which is not the first time in this episode sequence that somebody has made a mess and left it for another person.
Correct.
We're all very busy.
Yes. We then cut to the Chiyoda ward, and Ichijo and Sugita have gone to the drugstore that those lighters are from, and they find out that the store is not even open yet. It's opening tomorrow. And they're like, but what's the deal with these lighters? And it's like, oh, it's just advertisement for the grand opening.
We sent intern Ricky up to the train station to hand out lighters to people.
Do you know what time? From about like 10 till we ran out? They're starting to put the pieces together. Because then there's another discussion that of the victims without lighters, 10 of them had a pass for this particular train line. At the Institute, Police Science, Godai is there holding the baton command stick for the Tri-Chaser. And he's like, hey, Inakita, I have an idea for something, but I need you to help.
I need you to electrocute me for a while.
And she is so excited by this that she punches him in the chest and runs off.
Yep, I've got a special room for that. Come with me. And I love the fact that these two are the dum-dums that keep doing, like, innuendos at each other that neither one of them gets. Like, this is the same, it's like, what was the line that she threw out a few episodes ago? It's like, I need you to come here and touch it.
Yes.
They keep saying suggestive things, but he's a golden retriever and she's completely obsessed with science, so neither one of them connect.
Correct.
Yeah, they've got...
They aren't even registering that these are innuendos.
Yeah, no, they have wonderful energy together. Just like, yep, we're going to do a thing.
They are. They're fantastic. An entire episode of the two of them just chuckleheading around would be so good.
I want a sidebar episode, like our next reset episode, is them going to like the Children's Science Center. And Godai playing with all the like the experiments and everything.
Let me explain to you how a Tesla coil works.
They'd be adorable.
That'd be so good.
Ichijo just sitting there with the tickets holding both of their beverages.
Somehow he's wound up as the parent.
He's the chaperone in this arrangement.
We cut to the Shibuya ward, and Garima is just walking down a nice scenic park avenue. And we see a mother and child recognize that someone's walking towards them menacingly with
a big-ass sword. Yeah.
Yeah. And the mother cradles the child to be like, all right, this is the end, sweetie. Let's not look.
They still don't flee. They don't do anything.
However, this is a case of honor amongst Garungi. Don't worry, that's not the trope of Satsu. I just wanted to say that. Because she walks right past them, and at this point...
Yeah, they had us the first half, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you don't sniff like I need to stab you today.
This is the point where the mother then picks the child up and runs. Yeah. But up ahead, we see the woman from the train that Garima knocked her purse down. She does nothing to prevent her own death.
Yep. She even says, like, that woman, like, she recognizes
her. Yeah, she acknowledges, hold on, you...
Rude train lady.
Doesn't turn around, doesn't try to divert path at all. For a moment, looks like both her and the guy she's with are going down.
But the guy wasn't on the train.
He wasn't on the train. So just she dies and Garima leaves.
Yep, same thing. Snick, snack, don't turn around.
The guy looks down at his now decapitated spouse?
Girlfriend, friend? Wife, fiance?
Who knows?
Yeah. Paramour?
Yes. And screams.
God, that's a whole ass origin story, though, right there. Like, that guy's got his own side quests now. There's a whole nother series about him, and that was his Batman moment.
Yes. I now want a spinoff where he, you know, makes his own vigilante costume.
Like Woody Harrelson quality hero costume, too. It's not good.
Yeah, exactly. We cut to the library. Sakurako's literally just there looking at books. That's all this scene is.
We keep having Sakurako, like, diversions that don't have much going on. Yeah, we get it. She's got stuff to look at thoughtfully.
It's because we know she is a target and is out and about. It's to build suspense.
Yes.
Consider my suspense built.
We cut to the Taito Ward, and Ichijo and Sugita are at the door of an apartment building talking to the brother of one of the victims. And again, good police work, asking some questions. And, oh man, this scene got heavy because the brother starts crying.
Emotional damage!
Yes.
Yeah, that sucked.
They, you know, apologize for his loss and go to leave. Because they ask him if, you know, he takes the train. He's like, well, yeah, for school, but today's not a school day.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they're leaving, he's like, wait, no, he said he had a match he was going to. He would have gotten on that train. They've now put together that all of the victims seem to have been on this particular train at this particular time.
I now suspect Tennis as the culprit.
Ichijo gets to the car right as a call's coming in, and he relays all of this information to the chief. Victims, how they got to this particular station varies, but they all were at this station getting on this train at this time.
Mm-hmm.
While this phone call is going on, we get the information that the guy who is with Purse Lady has been talking to the cops, and he said that before, you know, she died, she confirmed that she knew who Garima was and that, yeah, she had been on the train. So yeah, they tell...
That sort of rudeness in public would have been comment-worthy. Like, when she got home, like, there was a really freaking rude lady on the train.
Yeah. And so they've passed that information along to the chief. Yeah, ULF was on the train, has somehow marked its victims. And bravo to you. You were right. You called it.
Hell yeah.
We cut back to the library. Sakurako is getting some stuff out of a locker. She stumbles, has to pick her bag back up. We cut to a mad scientist lab inside the Institute of Police Science. Inokita has,
like, welding goggles on.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
We hear shocks. We see Godai. Sort of looks like Titan form, but something's a little different. It's not clear. And he turns back to normal, and Inokita, like, mother of God, takes her glasses off.
Yeah, full mad scientist moment for her. Love it. And Godai is the sweatiest man I've ever seen in my life.
And he just says, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we cannot emphasize enough, buckets of sweat.
Yeah.
Oh no, he's hot!
That didn't do anything for me, but...
Yeah.
You know, good for you.
No, he's sweating cause he's hot.
Oh, you meant hot in a literal sense, not in a metaphorical.
Temperature sense, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you would have expected us to get that.
Yeah. Stepping outside your particular idioms here, aren't we?
Fair it is me.
Exactly.
He is hot, though.
Yes, we know. To keep, you know, the temperature down... We cut to Pol-Pol. And Minori walks in. Nana greets her. Thanks her for covering. So apparently Minori was pulling double duty between the preschool and Pol-Pol while Nana was out.
The children also are employed there. At least as far as Pops is concerned.
Do you think they sing It's a Hard Knock Life as they scrubbed the floors?
That or something from Les Mis.
And Minori's like, oh, don't worry about it. I just had to put up with some really bad jokes. No one likes Pop's jokes.
I like Pop's jokes.
We like Pop's jokes.
Yeah, they're painful, and that sustains me.
Yusuke likes Pop's jokes. And Pop's like, how dare you? You laughed at them. Betray me like this in front of my own family. He turns on the TV to find that the police are giving an announcement, and they break it down. Hey, if you were on this train at this time, you are at risk. Please
get your
stay
ass inside.
Yeah. And we get a quick cut through of Ichijo in his car being informed that Garimabai has been spotted in Harajuku. Anyone who is available, head that way. He informs Nozomi that, all right, he's going to go there. We get Godai getting the information as well, only he is specifically told to go to Gainan Park.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be roughly near the library that Saratari is in. We get Tsubaki just walking down the hall of the hospital, and he sees the TV is on and the broadcast.
And he puts two and two together.
So he very quickly calls Sakurako. It's like, hey, when you left the hospital, what train did you get on?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get on this train at about 11 o'clock? And she's like, yeah, I did. Why?
He's like, where are you? She basically says outside and out from behind a tree as if on cue.
Garimabai.
Yep. Ba-dum-ba-dum.
And for the first time in this series, someone does a thing to try and prevent their own impending doom.
She turns and runs away. Not well. She trips on literally the first stair she comes across. But she makes an effort, and I'm here for it.
Honestly, she's in heels, and the skirt cuts off just above her knees and is fairly tight, so her range of motion isn't all that great to begin with.
I guess we can't expect her to kick off the heels and just book it.
She is a woman in an Inoue episode, it happens.
In fairness, Garimabai also has a tighter skirt that comes down to about just below her calf under the flowy skirt that she already has, so her range of movement's not great either.
Yeah.
But yes,
Sakurako. It was just good to see the attempt made.
Yes. Sakurako trips on the stairs. Garima comes up, goes ahead and just transforms into her monster form, because what does she need to hide at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Try chase her to the face.
Hiya!
Godai gets off the bike. Henshin immediately into Titan form.
Hell yeah, he's got special plans.
Grabs the control baton handle off the bike, turns it into the sword. They clash.
Sakurako's self-preservation instincts apparently have turned off at this point because she's just standing there watching from behind a pillar.
She has at least moved from the staircase to behind a pillar.
Yeah, thank God she wasn't just laying on the stairs with a panicked look on her face.
But also at this point, you know, Godai is pulling Garimabai away.
Mm-hmm.
So distance is being formed. Ichijo shows up, as luck would have it, from the direction Saratari is hiding. So he's able to get up and just walk up to her. They're huddled together watching. And the electricity starts sparking off of Godai again. Only this time it's a little different.
Mm-hmm. He's been practicing.
He has. And we get an upgrade.
Which, from the show notes, I'm assuming is called Rising Titan Form.
The first of Kaoru's Rising Forms.
Oh, we get more of these.
Rising Titan has a punching power of 15 tons, more than double that of Base Titan 7 tons. It has 18 tons of kicking power compared to normal Titan's 10 tons. Its maximum jump height is 13 meters. The previous form was 10 meters. Its speed is maintained at 100 meters and 7.2 seconds. Its weapon is the Rising Titan Sword, and Rising Calamity Titan is its finisher.
And all of that is freaking dope. Like, this Titan form is... that's ridiculously strong. Like, Titan was strong, Titan was durable, but we're now in, like, firmly, like, pull limbs off people territory of I don't care.
And man, the armor looks so cool.
It does.
The shoulders on the chest have risen ever so slightly, mm-hmm. and the silver has been replaced with gold.
Yeah, the silver on purple was cool, but the gold on purple is a statement.
Oh, it's so good.
The sword's all serrated
and
now.
Looks like it's increased in length, too.
It generally does. You didn't have to say that. Thanks for noticing.
God, this form looks so cool. And you know what? This brings us to this week's Tropusatsu.
Woohoo!
Mid-season upgrades. In media, dealing with conflict, it is very common for the protagonist to receive some kind of power-up, you know, partway through the story. We saw this initially with the unlocking of the forms, and we are basically at the halfway point now. There's 49 episodes, so this is episode 24. We would need a 24.5 to be the exact midpoint. So we're seeing an increase. As you said, I guess we're going to see a rising version of all of the forms.
I can't wait for you to get your rising dragon form.
Maybe I'll like it more. Who knows?
You know what? I hope not.
So the term mid-season upgrade is reportedly originating from the Gundam fan community.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the original Mobile Suit Gundam, if the RX-78 got an upgrade
I'm
in like the middle
Wing.
Of the season.
Like Wing immediately popped into mind.
So
G-Gundam.
G-Gundam with the replacing the Shining with the God Gundam.
Yep.
Mid-season point, replacing the Wing Gundam with Wing Zero.
Actually, I can't think of a Gundam series that hasn't, that's come out, you know, in the last 20 years. AGE upgrades, Iron Blood Orphans upgrades consistently. They're like three. Even the villains in those series get upgraded suits too. Like the Tolgies 2 becomes the Epion for Zex Marquise and Wing. But like, it's not just that. I can't think of a franchise that has a series component that hasn't done this, at least not in like the fantasy or science fiction genres.
I fully 100% believe that this came from the Gundam community, because especially by the time Kuga came out, most of the series we've named have happened. It is an established trope.
Yeah.
I think though Kuga would be considered the first of the Kamen Riders to have that. It wasn't really a thing in the Showa era to get upgrades. There was the one who had his ultimate form, but there was literally one out of 10 who got an upgrade.
It's not the first Sentai to do it, though. Power Rangers definitely did it. They had a whole ass movie about it.
Power Rangers is also a little different, because for a while, the Battleizers, the upgrades the Red Rangers would get, was an American exclusive thing. That didn't exist in the Sentai footage.
Really?
Sentai actually picked that up from Power Rangers.
Interesting, and I've learned something.
While not common, some other show series had alternate forms.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, even Godzilla was doing this about this time, because this is about the Heisei era where we started getting, like, the Burning Godzilla from Godzilla vs. Destoroyah. That was definitely an upgrade towards the end of the Heisei arc of Godzilla films.
So, you know, we call it mid-season, but also doesn't have to be. It yeah. could be, if it's a multi-season story, it could be right at the start of the new season, we get an upgrade. That, particularly for me, G Gundam, because that's a two-season show.
Yeah, Shining to Burning.
Comes in at season two.
Yeah.
This Rising Titan, like we said, it's going to be the first of these rising forms, and it's convenient that it comes at the halfway mark of a 49-episode series. Mid-season upgrades at this point in time are a stable part of Toku television, Kamen Rider being no exception to this.
Hell, Marvel even does it. Think about the difference between like Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2 suits. Like Bucky gets an arm upgrade before we move into the endgame arc. Like, it's become a thing, you know? I like it.
Yeah. And, oh man, we get the great pose. Garima comes in for the strike, and he just runs her through with Rising Calamity Titan.
Yep. Freaking awesome. Roll credits.
He did the Monster Mash. The Monster Mash.
I felt it coming that time. Out of context.
Yes, mommy. I mean, Mei Garima Bai is poised, beautiful, and commanding. She is an absolute bedazzled baddie. She may be a mantis, but I'm willing to risk my head for this. I'd at least go out happy.
I can't fault you at all for that.
Yeah, that was both shorter and longer than I was expecting, because I fully anticipated you to be like, yes, mommy. Moving on. I would have got it. I would have understood.
Savitar and Ichijo see the explosion. It is larger. There is small molecules. Tsubaki's not going to be able to autopsy anything from this. And Godai strikes the coolest pose.
I'm telling you, man, that's what he was like, he was at Rising Titan. He had it. What he spent 6 hours in that room practicing was detransitioning as he turned around and struck a cool pose. And he got it. He freaking nailed it.
Right as he turns and looks at them, back to normal, he's holding the handlebar.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool.
Yep.
Ichijo and Sarutaru come up. He gives him the thumbs up. There's just a little bit of denouement conversation. End of episode.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man. These two episodes were phenomenal.
Yeah, I really enjoyed these episodes for sure.
So let's start off. What do we want to pick as our...
It has to be Tingles.
Tingles.
It could have also been Blades, to be fair.
I was going to say Lighter, but...
Lighters, also good.
I like Tingles.
Yeah, because then we can say it, this fight gave me 4 out of 5 Tingles.
Yes. All right, so let's start with Meguri Maba. As a reminder, we did rename a couple of our categories. It's no longer personality, it's behavior, and it's no longer plan, it is methodology. So, behavior. Man, Meguri Maba exudes cold confidence.
Mm-hmm.
She's not quite on the same level as Labaruba Day, but she is proud, she is cold, she is calculating. When she is on screen, you pay attention to her. She doesn't just say that she'll become a go, like Garima Ba did. She says she's the only one capable. Which, you know, as the leader of the Meg group, I think is warranted. She takes the Trigoram attack, and yeah, she's wounded from it, but she's still able to shrug it off and keep going. I... 4.5.
Okay.
Yeah. Design. I'm really glad we got the close-ups on her nails in the train. Because for a while I was like, where's the mantis other than like the green and the wrap skirt? But seeing that literally the pincers are painted onto her nails, that her nails do come to a point as well. So that's there. She tends to stand arm like this, which now that I'm thinking about it, this is terrible radio, I realize. But she holds her arm in a mantis pose.
Yeah, she's got like the one arm under the other with the limp wrist on the top one, kind of evocative of like a mantis scythe. Yeah.
Yeah. Her human form does not match a mantis as much as some of the other forms have matched what animal they are. But she looks so put together.
Mm-hmm.
The outfit works. It actually blends in pretty well compared to some of the other Garongi. Were she not walking down the street with, you know, her giant blade, you might not pay attention to her.
Right, yeah.
You might notice the one knives chow colored bang. Because she did have that one splash of green on her hair.
Mm-hmm.
Human form, again, doesn't tie into the animal as well as some of the others have, but it looks good. And then her monster form slightly lets it down. It suffers a lot from the same problems that Garongi have this season. It is a vibrant green, because sure, mantis, but also it's only green. Some interesting choices of jewels along the head and chest. I tried to look. I saw the skirt. Did she have a diaper as well or no? Just skirt?
Just a skirt.
Okay. The blade is cool. Part of the design, that's also evocative of mantis. I wish the monster design was a bit better, especially jumping forward, you know, or I guess jumping back when the fact that the Malgum we watched as part of the Patreon special was Mantis Malgum. I've seen cooler mantis monsters in Kamen Rider. But I... at least a 3.5 for design, I think. Yeah, 3.5. Methodology. So, this is interesting, because we started to see this with Gamma Ray, and I think they're making it clear. The Go seem to put restrictions on themselves.
Self-imposed, yeah.
Yeah. So, how interesting that her methodology is to pick out all of these people from a specific car on a specific train that she has... The show never says it, but she scent-marked them with the incense burner.
Yeah.
And then to just Samurai Flash, you're already dead. Don't look back. It is terrifying in a way that we have seen, but not quite as personalized. Particularly, you know, the paramour of Purse Lady, for him to deal with that. It's not just the sheer existential horror of Gamma Ray, of a person just ragdolls in front of you and collapses. Or even Vagus Baz, there is a bang, a person drops to the ground. You know, the fact that she kills in a way where somehow Tsubaki knows the victims don't even realize they are dead. She might be my favorite Garangi that we have encountered up to this point. And I know we've said that before, but it's always true every time we say it. Hence why we put the qualifier up to this point. I think I'm going to give another 4.5 for methodology. So the 4.5, a 4.5, and a 3.5, that brings my score to a 4.1666 repeating. Tingles.
Tingles, if you will, or if you won't. So for me, like, pulling up a picture here of her actual, like, appearance, there are some other elements in there that kind of do evoke Mantis, especially in, like, the legs. Like, you have chitinous joints, indicative of, like, you know, insectoid armor plates and stuff like that. You're absolutely correct. We honestly didn't get too many good views of this monster form in the series. We were much more focused on the human form. And one of the things that I was thinking of as we were discussing it, because I am going to start with appearance, the skirt over skirt, the loose flowing skirt over the very tight skirt, is very invocative of, like, the way a mantis would have its wings folded over the back of its carapace. So you've got, like, the inner, you know, the carapace, and then you've got the actual wings on the outside. So you're right, there were a ton of little affectations about the human form that evoked mantis-type things a little bit. Like, even, just like you said, the way she stands, where she kind of has one hip popped, has one hand out with the limp wrist, kind of, you know, mantis claw evocative. That was really cool, that was on point. I'm going to give her a 4 out of 5 tingles on appearance, just because I really did like this character design, the human methodology. She's also going to get a 4 for me. I'm running the gamut here, but, you know, you're absolutely correct. The idea of those self-imposed restrictions that we've seen now twice, pheromone marking or scent marking a train cars full of people, and then releasing those people and then hunting them, that is cool. That's not just anybody I come across can get these hands. We have a marked plan and self-restriction. That's cool. So yeah, methodology, she gets 4.5 out of 5 for me. And then in terms of actual behavior, I'm also going to give her a 4. So, like, my score is going to be easy to calculate. It's going to be a 4. There's a quote about one of the characters in my favorite book, Revelation Space, where one of the characters is really arrogant, really confident, really self-assured, but somebody makes the comment that it's not undeserved, that he wears that confidence like a well-broken-in coat. And that quote came into my head as we were discussing our Mantis Madam here, because she really does. She bleeds confidence from the gills, but it's never in a way that seems arrogant or cocky. It's just, I fully understand my place, my position, and I am assured of my place in the cosmos. And, like, you see that play out, you know? She survives the first encounter not only with Kuga, but in Titan form, and takes a hit from the Goram, shrugs it off, takes damage, but Truck-kun and Hermit Crab Bro definitely didn't just shrug it off and keep moving. They got hit with the bike and they ate shit. This required another level up from Kuga to actually put her down. So that confidence was well warranted. Could have potentially even taken Godai out if they'd fought again without his little power up, because, you know, they were pretty evenly matched. The Goram powered down after the strike, so he didn't have that tool available anymore. I think she earned it, so I'm going to go with a straight 4s across the board. So for me, she gets 4 out of 5 tingles. How'd this one tingle you, Jetty?
Garima's design is pretty nice. Good color, nice head sculpt, and some cool crystals for texture and flair. She's a mantis, so she has a scythe, and it's a badass scythe. But while it is well executed, it's not particularly inspired. And her human form is very well dressed with some cool nails. It doesn't read as mantis really. I'll give it a 3, good but not groundbreaking. Her methodology is an interesting thing, and a hint at what is coming with the go. But scent marking victims to follow them and behead them is pretty cool. And seems to be effective until Kuga gets in the way. It's not backing over people with a box truck, but it's cool. 4.5. Her behavior is so awesome. She has an amazing presence that just commands respect. She is proud without being arrogant in a unique way. The way she carries herself is honestly entrancing. On paper, she shouldn't be as cool as she is. A 5 out of 5 for me, one of my favorites. That's a 4.16 repeating, Tingles.
So with a 4.16, a 4.16, and a 4.
That gets us to 4.10666 repeating, of course. That our highest? Have we broken 4 with a monster yet?
She is tied with Garrido.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Which makes sense because Garrido was one of the first times we really got invested in one of these guys, like the kill tactics and everything. Yeah, that makes sense. That tracks.
All right, so episodes as a whole. Plot. So this was more engaging, I feel, than last week. For the last few weeks that we've been doing episodes, I've had things that I've really liked, including, you know, a moment that is my favorite moment in the show to this point. And there's been some things that I didn't like. There's nothing in here that I didn't like. The stakes were, you know, appropriately high. We see that, you know, a main character is at risk. It's the first time that we've seen that other than, like, Ichijo throwing himself into a situation.
Mm-hmm. It's a non-combatant actually at risk.
Yes. We get to see a bit more of, you know, the evolving game of the Gurungi. You know, we see Tugo. We see a new law. We find out about the semifinals. This is... the story is moving forward, and it kind of feels like it's now starting to accelerate in a way that it maybe hasn't up to this point. Sure, we have had advancement, but, you know, there's a reason why, like, in G Gundam, that Season 2 is the finals,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the rest of the tournament. I really liked this. I had a ton of fun watching it. Certainly moments that I've enjoyed more on a moment-to-moment basis, but as far as, like, a two-episode arc, just... there? 4.5? Yeah, 4.5. Cinematography. This is another one. Anytime the Go-Ram shows up, the actual, like, Tri-Go-Ram bike, the fact that that is practical. Oh, man, so many practical effects for all of the slashes from Garima, the signpost, the column, the actual Tri-Chaser, the physical Go-Ram, the physical chunks from it collapsing. Honestly, super impressive use of CG in this. The fact that they stayed subtle and only kept it long enough for you to register what was happening, but not long enough to critique. Oh, so good. Great camera angles. You know, we get some great zooms and follows as well. I'm going to give cinematography a 5. And combat. The combat was so good. Like, last week's fight was really good. This was even better. And again, it came into the cinematography, the effect showing that, no, these are blades that they are wielding. It is a sword fight. The getting to see a Trigoram attack and just standing up and shaking it off really just nails down the stakes of fighting against Garima. And... I will say that I am not quite sold on Calamity Titan as a finisher, because it is just running them through. If there had been a bit more, I don't know, like knocking the sword out of Garima's hand and then stabbing, I think that would have put it just that little much better as opposed to just poke. But, Rising Titan looks so good. The combat looked great. 4. So that brings me to a 4.5 tingles for the episode.
Nice, nice. So I guess I'll go next. For me, I'm going to start with plot. One of the little things that we talked about, we haven't joined it together yet. So mantises, a common trait of mantises is that after a female is done mating with a male, she will kill him, generally by eating his head. So the mantis using decapitation as a method of kill is particularly appropriate. Second, mantises attract mates using pheromone trails. A female mantis will leave pheromone trails and then males will find that, or in some species, males will leave pheromone trails and females will track those to find their mates. So for her to pheromone mark an entire train's worth of people and then go hunt them and cut off their heads, the whole kill pattern was very, very mantis themed, which for me spikes the plot on these two episodes in particular pretty, pretty high. We saw legitimate good police work, and this, I guess, for me, connecting those dots myself as they did in the episode, this was one of the first episodes where it took me an extra second to go, what is, oh, that's clever. So it felt very good to have that kind of reveal as we go through the episodes. So for me, plot on these, 4.5. We got a lot of good character development, a lot of good character motion. We've upped the stakes. We're moving into our end game. Spectacular. I'm enjoying it. Cinematography, also good. So we had a unique lighting effect for our new Grongyang scene, but it wasn't nearly as aggressive as some of the last ones. Like when we were in the warehouse and we had like just the light, the intern flashing a light back and forth across our eyes every 6 seconds, that was distracting. It sort of took me out of that moment a little bit, but the light from behind, just, you know, background illuminating her, that was very particular, but also it created focus, and I liked that a lot. We had a lot of good cinematography during our fight scenes. You know, we'll get to fighting in a second, but I thought the cinematography for these episodes was particularly good. We had some scenes where we just cut away to certain characters, built suspense. Fantastic. I'm going to give it a 4. And then this is my first 5. I'm going to give the fight for this episode a 5 because we did have very good use of our practical effects in terms of our murder. Like when we saw Mantis Madam cut off that dude's head, and we saw just a bit of his head tweaking before we cut away immediately. We see in the fights the practical effects of like cutting through the signposts, and the editing was done remarkably well, so it looked perfect. Cutting through pillars, parts of the Goram. The effect on the environment around the combatants kind of did serve to give you a sense of the stakes. And we also got very dynamic fight scenes. We got fights that flowed through different forms, abilities, using different tools, breaking or taking an opponent's tools. You know, if the fights were like this consistently, like, they would be much more engaging. Because we have had some weak fights in the past, but this did it for me. So this is getting a 5 out of 5, which brings my total also to 4.5 tingles. I'm almost max tingles, boys.
For the episode's plots, the first episode is kind of vague as well as repetitive of her story from Distance and Azure Dragon. Once we get what she is actually worried about, it gets a lot better. Something I really like about this episode is there are a lot of interesting character pairings we don't usually see. Jean and Godai, Sakurako and Tsubaki, even Sakurako and Ichijo one-on-one. It makes for some new energy. We finally pay off the tingles from the last several episodes. And we get something pretty cool for it. Also, I really liked seeing Ichijo and Sugita putting in real detective work. I think this is a 4 overall. Cinematography for this episode is pretty good. They're keeping Bada in shadow, which is cool. The decapitation we got to see was really well done, especially given the time. The ending of 23, and really the last few episodes, have been playing with the sparks and stuff as Godai grows into his rising power. There is not a bad shot in these episodes, with many being very interestingly staged, especially Godai's return after Rising Titan. Another 4.5. The fights are so good. The hits have weight to them, and the destroyed props work so well. When Garima shrugs off the Trigoram attack was just badass. The choreography, especially the sword fights, was top-notch. A good debut for Rising Titan. And that visceral ending was great. 5 out of 5. That is 4.6 tingles repeating overall.
And I think that definitely makes our highest rated episode of all time, because that brings us on our overall score to a 4.533 repeating tingles.
Yeah.
Well, how dare they make the episode so good?
I know, right?
Well, I hope we keep on this trajectory for the future.
Certainly hope so. I mean, we now know for a fact that there are no May left, that it is just going to be go from here forward, or I guess until if there is whatever is above the go.
So I guess you could say that's where we go from here.
Yes.
Excellent. That's a good note to end on.
You're right. With that, join us next week when we will be watching episodes 25 and 26, Wandering, and Myself.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. For $5 a month, you get access to monthly bonus episodes. Coming soon, we watch Sabin's Masked Rider.
He's trying to flirt, Jared. Yeah. He's just not good at it.
When he's trying.
Yep. He's trying to turn on the charm, and now he's, like, doing weird touchy shit.